our Lord. My subject, as has been mentioned, is dealing with Nehemiah chapter 4 and verse 6. I'd like you to take your Bibles and turn to Nehemiah because we'll be reading a lot of the verses that are there. And one of the things that I would have to say I lack in, though it bothers me when I see others lacking in it, is the lack of turning in the Scriptures to see. I'm a human being, and I know that many of you are going to say amen silently. Probably won't say it publicly. But I make a lot of mistakes. And being one who makes mistakes, I want to recognize, want to encourage you to recognize that and then to look at the verses with me rather than expecting me to just read them correctly. And because I would much rather them be read correctly. The reason being, we can leave out one word and it can change the whole meaning. And that has been done many times. And so we want to make sure that we get it right. Builders of the wall, having a mind to work. You look at Nehemiah and you see that he had an attitude that was concerned about his people. He had been taken into captivity, being a devout Jew. And while in captivity, he had made the best of a bad situation. He had become the cupbearer or butler of Artaxerxes, the Persian king. In the first chapter of the book that bears his name, we see the great concern for his people. When he found out that the walls of Jerusalem were torn down, the gates were burned, when he found out that the people, the remnant that were there, were in such a disarray, it really concerned him. And this is something that has always caused me to think about us today. It talks about in that text that the people were in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem was broken down. The gates of the city were burnt down. And then it talks about that he wept, he mourned, he fasted, and he prayed. And it makes me always wonder about myself and my brethren. I'd like for us to consider ourselves today. When we hear about those things that are not going well in a congregation, when we hear about a brother or a sister that are not what they ought to be, what is our attitude? Sometimes I see an attitude of, so what? Sometimes I see an attitude as, well, I just go on about my day and it doesn't bother me. We need to have the attitude that he had, and we need to be ones that are willing to weep. And sometimes maybe we're not, and I'd like for each of us to consider that as we get into this. One of the reasons that the Nehemiah and the people had a success in building the wall, having that mind to work, was because they were concerned. And if there's not any concern, what work's going to be done? It's not going to be done. And I see that, and it's a frustration. And I'm sure you see it as well. Why is it that it has been said, and I believe true, that in most congregations, if not all congregations, the majority of the work is done by so few? Well, I believe it is because of that lack of concern. And so we can see in Nehemiah in the beginning an attitude that needs to be there. We think about King Artaxerxes, and we think about as Nehemiah is serving him. He sees his countenance. He sees it's different, and he asks him questions, and so he tells him about his people. What do people see in us? Again, when a brother is not what he ought to be, when a sister is not what she ought to be, when the congregation is not what the congregation ought to be, when there are troubles, when there are things that are going on that need to be concerned about, do the people see a difference in our countenance? I'm not saying a feigned difference. There was not a feigned difference here. But the king very clearly saw that there's something wrong here. And so he began to question. And when he questioned, of course, he gave him the results of why he was the way he was, and he received blessings because of it. In response to his concern, the Persian king not only let him go back to Jerusalem, but he, in essence, paved the way, gave him the materials to be able to do it. Now, this is a man that was not a Christian. I shouldn't use that word because none of them were Christians then. He was not a child of God. He was probably not too concerned about God and his concerns. But yet here was a man that was serving him and served him well enough to be able to put in the position that was a trusted position. And so he was at least a kind man to some degree. He was concerned about this man. And it brings some other questions to my mind when I consider the king's response. Why is it that there are so many people, again, that will not help with the needed work? There are a lot of reasons. Some people are callous. Some people don't care. Some people are not interested in helping, and they're not going to help regardless of what you say. But it brings to mind the question, if I really am concerned about a lost soul, if I'm really concerned about a work, if I'm really concerned about something getting off the ground that is a really good effort, David Shearer is here. Fred Rose and he are going to be working in Iowa on the work. How are the people going to be interested in that? They have to see the interest in David, and they have to see the interest in Fred, and they have to really put forth a lot of effort. It gets frustrating, doesn't it, for those of you who have done work. I know Charles does work in Michigan and has for many years and works a secular job. But I'm sure that you could ask him and you could ask those other two men or anyone else, what happens when you go out and you want to have some help, when you need some help? Too many times people, again, are calloused, and too many times people are not interested and they don't help, and we have to beg, and that's a shame. But it still brings to my mind, when I see this, a secular man that is willing to help because of the countenance of his servant. Are there not those among the church that if we are really concerned enough, and if we really let the need be known enough, if they see the difference in our countenance, that maybe there will be some help there? Sometimes we give up too quickly. Sometimes we're not willing to ask. Sometimes we are maybe a little too prideful. We don't need to have to beg among the Lord's people to do the Lord's work, as we do sometimes. But sometimes it may be the fault of those who don't show enough difference in their countenance when there's a problem or when there's a need that needs to be dealt with. There are always those in any work that don't want to see it progress. Have you ever been in a work that you've had enemies that you thought should, wouldn't be enemies? Well, of course you have. Well, the text talks about Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arabian, who were such people. It says in chapter 2, verses 10 and 19, that they were grieved. They were actually mad, I think is what that means. Why were they mad? Why were they grieved? Because someone was going to help the remnant rebuild. Why in the world would they be grieved? Why would they be mad? Because, well, they were evidently receiving some benefit in their minds of the wall still being down, about the remnant suffering as they were suffering. And so they were going to do everything they could to stop the work going on. And unfortunately, that is one of the negatives we have to deal with, because it seems, regardless how good the work, regardless of how needed the work, there are always going to be somebody who's going to try to put a wrench in the works and try to cause it to stop. But again, we don't need to dwell on that. And I don't think we're going to be successful if we do dwell on that, because there are too many other positives, as we'll see in this lesson, I hope. In spite of their enemies and the many dangers, temptations, and challenges, the people were successful in building the wall. That's the key that I want to stress here. They were successful. And the reason they were successful is because they had a mind to work. And so I'm going to go back to that theme over and over and over. Are we successful in what we're doing, regardless of where we are? Why are we not, if we're not? Oftentimes, we blame it on the enemy. Oftentimes, we talk about all these other things, but too many times, it's because we don't have the mind to work. How many times have you heard people, or maybe you've said yourself, I want to work, but then when the work is presented, well, no, I don't have time. I don't have the experience. I don't have the knowledge. Well, as has been said so many times already in this lectureship, the only way we're going to have the knowledge is by putting our minds into the book. But we've got to also have the mind to work. It doesn't matter how much knowledge we have if we don't put it to practice. And there are too many of us that don't. That may apply to you and it may not. You have to determine that. I'm saying that in a broad manner. But it is something that we see. And sometimes it's much easier to see it in others than it is ourselves. So it needs to be that we look at ourselves very closely concerning these things and whether we are a hindrance to what needs to be done or whether we are a help. Whether we're ones that have a mind to work or whether we don't. But these people are a great example to us, and in spite of the many enemies they had, they were able to win. And it tells us that we will win too, if we have a mind to work. So what can we learn from Nehemiah and the wall builders? The first thing is that we can learn that there is a need to work. It's not going to happen by itself, is it? Now, I know you know that, but there are a lot of people that seem to not know that. There are those brethren that seem to think that there is no need to work. All we've got to do is come and sit in our air-conditioned buildings or heated buildings, whichever the case may be, on these soft padded pews, and some will not even come if there's a ball game on. Some won't come if it's hunting season. Some won't come, and you could add a lot of other things. But they just don't think there's any need. And so it becomes a self-serving situation that's not going to go out. It's not going to do any good. It's not going to work. Well, is it true that there's nothing to do? Of course it's not. And it will not be true as long as Satan walks about seeking whom he may devour, 1 Peter 5:8. And there's no doubt in my mind, as I'm sure there's no doubt in your mind, that he is going to walk about seeking whom he may devour and as long as time remains. And so as long as he walks about doing that, then we've got the work to do. This being the case, whose responsibility is it to get the church to recognize the need and thus to get to work? I think in a lot of your minds, probably you're thinking the preacher. Well, the preacher is very important. I do what I do because I don't think I could do anything else. I surely don't want to do anything else. And I believe it's a very important work, and we're given the responsibility to preach. But I don't believe that it is primarily the preacher's responsibility to encourage and to challenge the congregation, to individuals in the congregation, to do the work. If it's not the preachers, then who is it? It's the elders. And whether or not elders, it's the men. And sometimes it is so frustrating. All of us have been in those meetings in which there are men that don't have any really agenda. They don't really have any plan. It's basically just a waste of time. It shouldn't be that way. And I believe that God is going to hold everyone who has been put in the responsibility, whether it be as elders or, again, those congregations that don't have elders, going to hold them responsible for not taking the charge as they ought to take and the responsibility that they ought to have in making sure that the church recognizes the need to work and thus give them the opportunities to work themselves, the men who are involved in those responsibilities and that decision-making, but also, of course, the rest of the congregation. So the elders, again, I say, are primarily responsible. Unfortunately, and this is my judgment, maybe it's wrong, but unfortunately, in too many cases, they don't see the need to do much more than keep house. And thus, little is done. There are congregations of the Lord's body, going back to David Shearer and Fred Rose and the work there trying to get off the ground. You can talk about the Jamaican work. You can talk about any work that any of us are involved in. Too many times there are congregations that are sitting on, I don't know how much money, but thousands, maybe millions of dollars, while people are going to their deaths lost. When there are people that are wanting to do the work. Now, is God going to hold them responsible? You better believe it. Now, is he going to hold the preacher responsible that doesn't preach truth? Yes, but again, the responsibility in my judgment are the elders. Well, the men of those congregations where there are no elders. And surely every congregation should be striving to have elders because that's the way God has set it up. And those congregations that will not teach the truth on that or those congregations that will not put in elders when there are men who qualify are going to be held responsible as well. This being the case, the leaders of the church must recognize the need and then actually take the lead as Nehemiah did. Well, how do they recognize the need? How do they then take the lead? Well, one way is by investigating, by educating themselves concerning the need. Turn with you, if you will, to chapter 2 of Nehemiah. And we'll begin reading at verse 11. Here it says, "So I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days, and I rose in the night, and I and some few men with me, neither told I any men what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. Neither was there any beast with me, save the beast that I rode upon. And I went out by night by the gate of the valley, even before the dragon well and the dung port, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and the gates thereof were consumed with fire. Then I went on to the gate of the fountain and to the king's pool, but there was no place for the beast that was under me to pass. Then went I up in the night by the brook, and viewed the wall, and turned back, and entered by the gate by the valley, and so returned." It goes through verse 15. Now, why read those verses? Because it's pointing out that he wanted to know what was going on. He didn't rely on what others said. It was his responsibility in that situation to be the leader of the people. And he had to know what was going on before he could prepare himself. He had to know what was going on before he could prepare the people, before he could challenge them. And so it is today. The men of the congregation, where there are no elders, have a great responsibility. The eldership has a great responsibility to know what is going on and to make sure that they're not playing games, to make sure that they're not going to require of people something that's not necessary or even is wrong. And so he did that because he knew that he needed to understand, he needed to educate himself. And then when one educates himself, what should he do? What should the elderships do? They should then challenge the church to act based upon the need, not based upon, again, some frivolous thing, not based upon what they would like to see, but based upon what the need is. And we see that in this particular text in verse 17 of chapter 2. "Then said I unto them, you see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come, and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach." Come and build up the walls of Jerusalem. Why? That we be no more a reproach. Brethren, sometimes the Lord's body is a reproach to the community that they should be a blessing toward. And I lay that and again, in my judgment, could be wrong, but I lay it at the feet of the elders, if they're not eldering as they should, or the men where they're not elders, that are not being what they ought to be, that are selfish, they're only thinking of their needs and thinking of what they want to do and don't want to be bothered. And there are too many that are that way. The church must be challenged, or the church is not going to act, because not everybody has the mind to work, do they? I sometimes don't. I'll be honest with you. Sometimes I'm lazy. Sometimes I don't want to be bothered. And I'm sure each of us are that way. Well, it is the responsibility of the leaders then to challenge me. And I, as a preacher, must challenge as well, and I must challenge myself. But again, I'm saying that's their primary responsibility. But then what happens after the challenging? Making sure that the congregation understands, as Nehemiah made sure the people then understood, that what is being done by the authority of God and the encouragement in his situation of the king. It says that in verse 18, the first part of it. Then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, as also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. Too many things are done without ever a thought, at least it seems, as to whether God would approve it or not. Too many things are being done without giving the evidence as to why this is why it needs to be done. And we need to make sure that we give that authority and show why we have that authority, particularly those who are in leadership roles. Properly doing these things today will likely have the same effects as it did then. The latter part of verse 18, and they said, let us rise and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. Why did they say, let us rise and build? Why did they strengthen their hands? Because Nehemiah was the leader he needed to be. Because he educated himself. Because he then challenged the people and then gave the authority as to why they should do it. I believe the same needs are here today. And I really believe, without a shadow of a doubt in my mind, that there are many people that sit on the pews and don't do very much. They would do much more if they'd be challenged in the proper manner, being shown the need and given the resources to do what needed to be done. Now, I could be wrong about that, but as I said, I could be wrong about a lot of things, but that's my belief. I believe there are a lot of people that would work if they're put into that situation. It needs to be clearly understood that every person is answerable to God. I'm just as answerable to God as, we'll say, Jack Williams is an elder of this congregation, or Ed Crawford. But when it comes to this congregation, it's those elders that are responsible. And Jack's responsible as a gospel preacher, but it comes back to the fact that they are the ones that have the authority to lead this congregation. And you could apply that to any congregation with which we work, any congregation that we know of. Those who is put in the leadership position are doubly answerable in my judgment. We're all going to be answerable to God, but they are for not doing it if they don't do it, and they'll be blessed if they do. And so leaders, let's make sure that you are not just keeping house. That's my challenge. If you're an elder, if you're a man in a congregation that does not have an elder, I challenge you to make sure that you're fulfilling your duty. And I am convinced that if you do, we'll succeed. More people will have a mind to work. Because as I read this concerning Nehemiah, that's why they had a mind to work, because of the leadership of Nehemiah. And where there is no leadership or a lack of leadership, there's going to be a vacuum. And where there's a vacuum, Satan's going to put his minions in, and there are going to be more problems than one can deal with. What's another lesson that we can learn from Nehemiah and the wall builders? Well, we can learn from them that we can know, just as they knew, we can know who our enemies are. We can know it. Nehemiah and the people had to recognize that Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem were their enemies. Did they just declare, we're your enemies? How many enemies do that? Well, they don't do that. That's not the way Satan works. That's not the way his minions work. They act as friends. Have you ever worked with a congregation or been a member of a congregation in which you have made good friends at the beginning, and then at the end, not even near the end, they were your biggest enemies? Why? Because enemies don't show themselves as enemies. Not just by coming up and showing it, neither did these. This is why Paul warned the elders in Acts chapter 20, verses 28 through 31, the elders in Ephesus, take heed therefore to yourselves and to all the flock, over which the Holy Ghost has made you overseers to feed the church of God, which he has purchased with his own blood. For I know this, that after my departing shall grievous wolves enter in among you, not sparing the flock, also of your own selves, even from the eldership, shall men arise, speaking perverse things, to draw away disciples after them. Therefore, watch. And he goes on, but I want to stress the therefore watch. Now, who is he saying to watch? Yourselves and others. Why? Because there are going to be some that are going to be enemies. Can we know our enemies? Nehemiah shows that we can. We can know the enemies by what they do. Why is it that that happens, that people can take away Christians from the fold because they choose to allow them to take them? But oftentimes it's because the ones who should be watching are not watching and do not recognize the enemy. I believe our enemies are in essence the same as Nehemiah's were, with just different names who use the same tactics. And there's one of the great things we can learn in regard to the tactics that are used. There are a list of them that are given in this particular book. Their tactics were, and our enemy's tactics are, among other things, laughing and acting as if we are wrong or misinformed and have no authority. How many people have failed to do the things they should have done because they don't like to be laughed at? And I like being laughed at in some areas. Of course, I pick, and no people are going to pick at me. I like that, but that's not what I'm talking about. When you're doing something that's serious, do you like somebody laughing at you, acting as if what you're doing is just a waste of time? Well, of course not. But how many people have given up? How many people have stopped? I think a lot of them have. It says in chapter 2 and verse 19, they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said, what is this thing that ye do? Will ye rebel against the king? Well, already Nehemiah had told the Jews that had gone with him to Jerusalem that he had the authority of the king. He'd already given the evidence, but people are going to laugh. And then they mocked in chapter 4, verses 1 and 2. To mock is to treat with contempt or ridicule, to deride. Many good works have stopped because of mocking. In what ways did they mock? Well, what do these feeble Jews, they said. What were they implying? They're implying to the Jews, why, you can't succeed. You're feeble. You can't do this work. It's too big for you. They said, will they fortify themselves? Implying it's impossible to do so. They said, will they make a sacrifice? How pathetic for them to try in a situation like this, surely is what they implied. Will they make an end in a day? Well, they're foolish to think they can ever finish, much less in a day. And of course, it wasn't going to be finished in a day. Which brings me to another thought concerning oftentimes the minds of some of my brethren today. If it doesn't happen right away, then we're going to stop. How many good works have stopped because, well, there ain't many baptisms this year, and so we're not going to keep supporting that. Good, faithful brethren doing a good work, and yet it stopped because people don't have enough patience and recognize it's not going to happen in a day. How sad it can be at times. They said, will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which are burned? Why, that's nothing but a dream. How many times have you wanted to be involved in a work, or someone has come and said, we want to do this work? Oh, that's just a dream. It'll never happen. But it happens. Why does it happen when it does? Because people have a mind to work, and because they have proper leadership, and they have enough people that will back them in it. Satan will do everything to get us to turn away, and one of those is mocking. That's what happened then. It happens now. They also use ridicule, and ridicule is to make fun of, a deliberate, often malicious belittling. Now, we again pick, a lot of us do, enjoy that. Some people say, well, that's making fun of. Well, we can make fun of in a light way like that. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about belittling. There's no reason to ever belittle anybody. Every one of us is just as important as the other. We have different roles, but we're all important. We're all loved by God. Christ died for every one of us. But they ridicule. Verse 3 of chapter 4, even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down this stone wall. Were these words of Sanballat really for the ears of Tobiah? Well, of course not. These words were the builders on the wall. Why? Why would they say that? Well, a fox is a very small animal, isn't it? And if a small fox could break down their work, then what's the use to even try? And yet again, there are many people today that will mock and ridicule, and the ridiculing has the effect. Thankfully, Nehemiah was wise enough not to listen, and thankfully, Nehemiah was a good enough leader, again, to challenge the people not to listen. But then he didn't just do that. He then prayed that God would turn their enemies' wishes on their own heads, chapter 4, verses 4 and 5. And then in verse 6, so built we the wall, And all the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. So built we the wall. Why? Because they would not listen to the enemy. They would not give in to the laughing, the mocking, and the ridicule. But the enemy didn't give up. And this is one of the things we need to keep in mind about our enemies, God's enemies. They're not going to give up very easily. I can remember the years in which I have been a part of the battles against bringing alcohol by the drink into a community. Dry counties even at that time. And they would fail. Guess what happened? The next year it was on the ballot again. And it would fail. It was on it again. And it would fail. It was on it again. Then it would succeed. Why would it succeed? Because they kept on. And the ones who were fighting for truth didn't keep on. Fighting for decency didn't keep on. And unfortunately, that happens too many times with a lot of things. And then there was this conspiracy and threats. When their words would not stop the work, they threatened to fight. It says in chapter 4, verses 7 and 8, that when they heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth and conspired all of them together to come and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. I'm sure they thought this posturing will stop them. Our words wouldn't, but when we say we'll fight, they're not going to be willing to fight. They'll compromise then. Well, that happens in the church today, doesn't it? But thankfully, recognizing the need to continue to work, Nehemiah nor the people were unduly affected. They were wise enough not to allow the threat of battle to keep them from doing the work. And yet they didn't ignore them altogether. They prayed. I think it was Tony that said last night that we are not a praying brotherhood. It may have been someone else. We're not, probably enough. But you know, sometimes there are those who have the idea of prayer is going to do it all. And that's one of the greatest lessons I think we can learn from this particular text. They not only prayed, but they set a watch against them day and night, chapter 4 and verse 9. Praying is wonderful. Praying is what we need to do. We need to seek God's help. We need to recognize that we cannot succeed without Him, but neither will we succeed if all we do is pray. We've got to be about the business of doing the work. We've got to be about the defenses, and that's what they did. The enemy then sent rumors among the people in chapter 4 and verse 12, saying, "They shall not know, neither see, till we come in the midst among them and slay them and cause the work to cease." How many times has the good work ceased because people have listened to the words of others who have threatened and they've become afraid and so they have stopped? I think too many times. Too many times. We learn from Nehemiah and the people who had a mind to work that we don't have to be affected by such foolish words. And so they have used laughing, they've used mocking, they've used ridicule, they've used conspiracy, they've used threats, and then none of that worked, so they decided to be tricky and try to get Nehemiah to compromise. The word tricky means the practice of crafty, underhanded ingenuity to deceive or cheat. There are a lot of people that are that way. And then the word compromise, settlement of differences by arbitration or by consent, reached by mutual concessions. There's nothing wrong with compromising in some things, but we can't compromise with truth. I read history. I like history, and particularly I like to read the history and try to understand people like Hitler and Neville Chamberlain, who was the Prime Minister of Britain. And if you've read any history, you recognize that one of the reasons Hitler was able to do what he did is because Mr. Chamberlain, not evidently a good man from everything I read, but wanting peace at all costs, he compromised and compromised and compromised. And all the nations such as Poland that England had signed a pact with, a non-aggression pact, in which they would defend them if they were attacked, just let them fall by the wayside, one nation after another, because they wanted peace. Well, you know, we want peace in the church too, but we can't compromise with the truth. We cannot, or we will find ourselves in a spiritual situation as the world found herself in because of the compromises during that time. We've got to make sure that we stand up and do not allow ourselves to be tricked. And so it is that their threats and all the other things having failed, They decided to use the trickery, and so they requested an audience with Nehemiah, saying in chapter 6 and 3, come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono. Of course, Nehemiah was wise enough to know that that's not what they wanted. One of my instructors when I was in school preaching years and years ago, even though this is not exactly what he said, using a play on the words, said Nehemiah in essence said, oh no, I'm not going. Now we need to say, oh no, ourselves sometimes. He actually said, according to chapter 6 and verse 3, I am doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease while I leave it and come down to you? Why should the work cease? There's a mind to work. I'm not going to go down and just talk with you when there's no need in it, when there's no benefit in it. Oh, I get so tired of talk. And I know we talk. But I'm talking about the talk that just is endless and nothing gets done. How many business meetings does that happen in? Oh, it gets so frustrating, doesn't it? Talk. Get back for next month and keep on talking. There's very little done. And that's a detriment because people don't have a mind to work. There's a time to talk, I understand that, but we need to work. And when the talking hinders the work, we need to quit talking. When it did not work at first, they made false accusations and then said in chapter 6 and verse 7, come now therefore and let us take counsel together. Well, what did Nehemiah do? Oh, did he wring his hands and say, you know, they're making these accusations and I need to go talk to them because I need to get this straightened out? No, that's not what he said. To his enemy he said, there's no such things done as thou sayest, but thou feignest them out of thine own heart. Chapter 6 and verse 8. He recognized again they were the enemy. And he wasn't going to let them stop the work. And then to God, he said in verse 9, they all made us afraid, saying, their hands shall be weakened from the work, that it be not done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. How wonderful is that? You mean to tell me that Nehemiah was afraid? That's what he said. He wasn't just talking about the people. He was a man, and he was afraid. Have you ever been afraid? If you haven't, something's wrong. You're either not doing anything, or you need to look at a hard heart somewhere, at least it would seem to me. But Nehemiah was afraid, but he didn't let them stop, even though he was afraid, but he asked for God's strength that he would go ahead and do the things that he needed, which goes back to the prayer and the dependence on God. But in both cases, he knew that they only wanted to get him away from the people in order to do him mischief. And so let us learn the truth. We will know untruth. How can one know untruth if he doesn't know truth? Can't. So let us learn the truth so we can know what untruth is. And when we know what untruth is, we'll be able to do what God would have us to do in defeating that untruth and doing the work. I guess my time's about up. 5 minutes? You might have to tap me on the shoulder. One other lesson. I'll have to go quickly and leave out a lot of what I have in my notes, but we need to learn from Nehemiah and the wall builders of the need to encourage and challenge others to join us in starting and continuing and finishing a work. There are too many ruins of good works that have been started but have not been continued long enough to finish them. We need to do the work. One of the ways to challenge others to work is to stand upon truth against the enemy, such as Nehemiah did in answering Sanballat, Tobias, and the Geshem's charge that they were rebelling against the king. In Nehemiah chapter 2 and verse 20, then answered I them and said unto them, the God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore, we his servants will arise and build, but ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem. Also, when the enemies passed the rumor 10 times that from all places whence ye shall return unto us, they will be upon us, chapter 4 and verse 12, Nehemiah didn't throw up his hands. But rather, he prepared the people, and they were ready for battle, and they continued the work. He didn't compromise. There are a number of verses that we could look at concerning that, but I want to read Nehemiah chapter 4, beginning in verse 21. So we labored in the work, and half of them held the spears from the rising of the morning till the stars appeared. Just stop there for a second. Think of the sacrifice that had to be made. One of the problems in our society today, in our beloved country, America, is that we are too soft. And too many of us are not willing to make the sacrifices. How many of us would have been willing to build on that wall while we held our spear and while we did that from the rising of the sun till the setting of the sun? Too many times we're not willing. He goes on in verse 22, likewise at the same time said I unto the people, let every one with his servant lodge within Jerusalem, that in the night they may be a guard to us and labor on the day. So neither I, nor my brethren, nor my servants, nor the men of the guard which followed me, none of us put off our clothes, saving that everyone put them off for washing. They did the work because they had a mind to work, and they weren't going to let their enemies stop them. Of great importance is that in each case, Nehemiah reminded the people that their authority and power to build the wall came from God. And so I want to close out with this thought, and I believe it is so important. It actually probably goes into what Jack's going to talk about, was going to talk about this hour, but will now Thursday in regard to the eldership. The people had a mind to work because of the proper leadership. And I want to again challenge each one who is in the leadership position, primarily the eldership, and primarily where there is no eldership, as I've said many times, those men who have that responsibility to recognize God is going to hold you accountable if you do not give that leadership as you should, and challenge the people and encourage the people and lead the people in doing the work. The people with Nehemiah had the mind to work because of Nehemiah. In this congregation or any other congregation, if the leadership is not what it ought to be, the people are not going to do the work. Now, are they going to be held responsible if they don't do the work? Yes. But I believe that God holds the eldership responsible, the men where they're not in eldership,